Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the entertainment world. A week or so ago, I had the great pleasure of watching a movie, Jingle Hell. It's a gloriously amusing Christmas story about the perfectly average, perfectly normal, dysfunctional family. I think most of us belong to one of those. And my guest today is the producer and co-writer of Jingle Hell, Carter Ann McGowan. Welcome to the program, Carter.
Hello. Hi, Simon. Nice to speak to you.
Well, let me start by saying that I thoroughly enjoyed Jingle Hell. It's clever, witty, and it's oh so true.
Thank you. We've heard that from a bunch of people who've seen the film who said, "How do you know my family?" So I think everyone thinks it's their family in this film.
Jingle Hell has just been released on DVD by Jansen Media, a very fine company, I might add. But the movie itself has been around for some time. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of it?
Sure. Interestingly enough, the project came about, the beginnings of the script came about on a very, very long drive on a 4th of July weekend between New York and Pittsburgh with a friend who actually became the co-writer of the script, Kelly Bryan. She and I were tossing around ideas, and I had wanted to do an independent film that we could actually shoot without too many locations, and I had been thinking about family and Christmas and things we all went through at Christmas. So we were in traffic the whole day making this drive, and the whole outline of the script really happened in the car that one day. And we came out of that long trip with a good outline of what became the script, and a year and a half later, we were actually shooting the script. We shot it on Long Island at the end of 1998, and it was edited throughout 99 and hit the film festival circuit in 2000, from 2000 to 2002, and went on from there. It's been seen in various places. It's been on a few PBS channels. It's been on a cable outlet in England. It's been, you know, kind of doing the rounds. And the actual shooting of it came about fairly directly from the script, because I worked in theater and I really wanted to work with certain people that I knew or had worked with in theater. So we were able to pull our cast from people we knew or people the director, Will Tully, knew. And my co-producers, Stacey Autumn and Liz, also worked in theater. So we could, from our knowledge base, pull together a group of a great cast to do this film. And so it came about. It came together fairly quickly. It was scary how quickly it came together, kind of a year and a half from idea to shooting. So that's how it happened.
But that's interesting, and it's an aspect that I really hadn't considered about the movie, the fact that many of you are involved with theater. And theater, by definition, you have a set, and you have to work within the set. And now I think about it, Jingle Hell does fit that mold. I mean, there's not a lot of changes of scene.
Right. It's they are long scenes for a film. They're particularly long for a film, I would say. Part of that was because financial reasons. When you're shooting a low-budget independent, you don't have all the resources to say, okay, we're going to have, 60 different locations and we're going to blow up a car. You have to make do with what you have. So that was one of the reasons that we kept it small. The other was because we really did want this ensemble feel of it. We wanted people to see these characters interacting like a family. And we shot it over a course of 14 days. So we shot it really quickly. Couldn't really be pulling the camera around to different locations. And we also, since we were working with actors from the theater world, we trusted them a whole lot to be able to do this really quickly, because in theater sometimes, in summer stock, you are putting together something in 3 weeks, in 2 weeks. And so that's a lot of our theater background was pulled into making this a project that could be done on such a low budget in such a short time with such a terrific cast who would just say, oh, okay, I'm used to doing a 5-page scene, no problem. That's a short scene. So that's that we really did rely on our theater history for that. Yeah.
Did I hear you correctly? The shooting was done in 14 days?
Yes, 14 days. 14 days, and it included a day off for Thanksgiving, and it included 2 days where the camera was making too much noise to actually use that footage when we got it. So ultimately, what you see on film is the result of 11 days of shooting.
Wow.
It was insane.
I'm sure that there's a category in the Guinness Book of Records.
We should apply for it, because we were shooting some days 10 pages a day, which is unheard of. So,
wow.
Yeah.
you billed as the producer and also the co-writer. Mm-hmm. Was it as much fun to write as it is to watch?
It was a lot of fun to write. Kelly and I, our writing relationship was kind of, I would put it down on paper, send it to Kelly. Kelly would comment on it. And a lot of times we'd come up with things that she'd say, oh, you know what my dad does? And it would be really funny to put it in here. And I'd say, oh, you know what my father does? He always wears white socks. So there's a recurring joke in the film about white socks. Which is my dad, the white socks wearer. But there was a lot of humor in the writing of it, and just a lot of funny discussions about what goes on, what Christmas means to families, both for the better and for the worse, and also, some of the other storylines that are a little bit heavy. There are some storylines that are a little bit heavy. I tend, when I'm writing, to get very emotionally involved with the characters, so people would think I was crazy. I'd sit at my computer and I'd be laughing or crying sometimes. And you just hope that the audience will be doing the same, hopefully at the right points. But it was a lot of fun to write. It was a very quick write, like I said. It was not a long scripting period. But we probably went through about 4 or 5 drafts, fixing it up, cleaning it up. And it was very enjoyable. Yeah.
I popped the DVD into my player, not knowing what to expect. Even the opening credits were riveting. Seamus.
Yes.
With his white socks. I mean, he's just classic.
Yes, it's people. It was great to be able to pull people in immediately with the credits. Because we didn't, again, it's a low-budget indie film. You really need to start it off and keep people's attention at film festivals, because at film festivals, people will just walk out if you don't get them quick enough. And the fact that we had people laughing during the credits was a very good thing for us, kept people in their seats. So just the way Will, our director, and Dave, our editor, put that sequence together was just terrific.
Oh, and hugely funny.
And it introduced everyone. I mean, within that 3 minutes, it introduced almost every character in the film. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I spend a good deal of my time talking to authors, and I hear this one recurring theme. And that is, they base their characters on real people. Maybe not, you know, a single person, but rather, you know, a little bit of Joe over here and a little bit of Sam over here.
Yeah.
Are the Fitzgeralds out of that mold?
There are characteristics of each of the characters. It's funny. They're kind of from two places. The funny thing is that I am an only child. So it's a family with five children in it, the Fitzgeralds. So people would say to me, is this your family? And I'd say, I have no siblings. And people would think that was crazy that I had written this because it's, you know, so much about siblings. But there are characteristics of each of the characters that I can point out, having seen either in my family or knowing from my co-writer's family that she picked up certain characteristics. And the other thing we did, not that they were, you know, basing on, to some extent we based the characters on the actors we knew we could get to play them, and brought in some of the traits of those actors that we knew. The character I'm thinking of the most is the one that Stuart Zagnett played in the film. And I knew Stuart from working at his talent agency for a year. And I had always wanted Stuart to play that role. And I wrote a lot of what I knew of Stuart as a person into that character. So it was, you know, they were built on real people we worked with as actors and real people we knew in our own families. We pulled all that together into the film. Of course, you know, one of the actors is playing a pediatric oncologist, Jimmy Brennan, not a pediatric oncologist, so I didn't pull that from his life. But, you know, that I pulled from my family. I have a doctor in the family and just things I had seen working with people in medical field, too. So from a whole lot of different places, but there is a lot of truth in the characters. I don't think you can really sneak away from that. I think your own history filters what you write all the time. So,
in fact, let's take a little step back here, mm-hmm. Just for the benefit of our listeners. Would you care to share the basic storyline with us?
Sure. It's an ensemble cast and an ensemble story, really, so there are several different storylines that I would say are braided throughout the film between all these characters. The overarching story is just really a family, a whole family home for Christmas weekend. All the kids home, the adult kids and their kids, home in the matriarch and patriarch's house for Christmas weekend. The parents are in a new home, which is not the home that all these children grew up in, so they're feeling a sense of dislocation by being in this new house with the parents. And then we have, you know, one relationship breaking up among the adult children. We have one relationship between two unmarried people, which shocks and appalls the matriarch and patriarch because they're very religious Irish Catholic family, which I can say probably comes from my family. We have a child, one of the grandchildren, doubting Santa Claus. We have a troubled sibling coming home, and we have all of this taking place in the context of there being no TV in the house because the mom of the family has decided that they are going to act like a family this year. So there's no escape valve. They can't all sit around the TV and watch football. So here they are all in this house having to live with each other, confront each other, and ultimately they all love each other, which I think is something that comes through in the film too. And then we had this one other story that kind of takes us out of the family and into the world as a whole, which is the story of the oldest son, the pediatric oncologist, questioning whether he's making enough of a difference and kind of going through a midlife crisis of, you know, I got into this business, this field, because I wanted to make a difference, and I feel like I haven't. And that was kind of our one storyline that pulls out of the family and into the world in general.
I love the characters, you know, without doubt, you know, Seamus and Peg are the key players.
Yes.
Seamus is just delightful in that he's he's so intrinsically grumpy.
He is. That is his defining characteristic, is grump. So
Peg, on the other hand, oh, this is going to be the best Christmas ever.
She's you know, looking for the best Christmas ever, but Peg is also the matriarch, a little bit of someone who can stick the knife in, I would say, which is totally not my mom. I would like that disclaimer right here. Peg is not my mom. But some people have seen their own mothers in that character, and I will leave it at that. Not me.
As I understand it, the profits from the DVD sales are going to a very, very worthy cause. Would you like to tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Sure. When it came time, the film was being re-released this year on video by Janssen Media. And at the same time as that was going on, a friend of mine, Mary Jo Lodge, was working with a family whose son was fighting cancer. The family's name is the Hurd family of Easton, Pennsylvania, and their son David was fighting with cancer. And Mary Jo became involved with St. Baldrick's, and the Hurd family became involved with the St. Baldrick's Foundation as they were trying to raise money in order to, what St. Baldrick's does is it funds childhood cancer research, which is actually an underfunded field. So I got to know about this, and unfortunately David lost his battle with cancer this year, and we really felt that we needed to do something to really bring home you know, how important it is to raise funds for this cause. And since we do have that one storyline in our film about the pediatric oncologist feeling that too many children don't make it, and there is, you know, he is not doing what he set out to do because he's suffering too many losses among his patients, we thought there was a good connection between our film and what St. Baldrick's is trying to do. So given that, we got in touch with St. Baldrick's, and so all of the profits that my company, the producer of the film, would have been making off the DVD and off every instant download are going to St. Baldrick's, which is, like I said, they fund more childhood cancer research than any entity in the U.S. other than the U.S. government. So they're a great foundation, and we are, you know, very lucky to be working with them. And, you know, it just, on some level, it was fate that our storyline, one of our storylines, fit in exactly with what they do. So we're very grateful.
Do you by any chance have the URL of St. Baldrick's?
They are www.stbaldricks.org. That's stbaldricks.org. Yeah. And Baldrick is actually a contraction of bald because of obviously the cancer connection, and St. Patrick because the first event they ever held was on St. Patrick's Day. So there you have St. Baldrick's.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Have they been around for a long time? Or?
They've been around since 2000, I believe. They've been around for about 12 years, and they've raised an incredible amount, $119 million, actually, this year since 2000. Since 2000, they've raised $119 million to fund childhood cancer research.
Wow.
So they're a terrific organization, yeah. And they're really... you know, I think about 4%. It's an incredibly small number of research money that goes to cancer goes specifically to children's cancers, and they want to bring more money to that, obviously, because still 1 in 5 children who are diagnosed with cancer don't make it, which is a very high number, obviously, when you're thinking about children. 1 out of every 5 don't survive, and that's, you know, that is their focus on making that number a lot smaller.
I mean, cancer is a disease that you never want to think about, but
right.
You know, when when it involves children, it makes me want to cry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a devastating disease, and seeing people go through it. And even, you know, many of those who make it through, we have to think about, they have the rest of their lives to live, and a lot of them are left with, you know, chronic conditions because of the treatment. So there's a lot to focus on there. There's a lot that we still, a lot needs to be done with regard to children's cancer and supporting the research and the families who are going through it. And, you know, and even the caregivers, which is kind of a part of the story of the film, the burnout rate among oncology staffs in children's hospital, in children's hospitals is extremely high because it is such a horrifying disease among children to see little kids suffering from it.
But that was something that I picked up when I watched Jingle Hell. You know, it's a gloriously funny movie, and yet that there was that somewhat dark aspect of, mm-hmm. you know, I've done everything I can, and these little kids are still dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, very sad.
It's a tough area, and actually, you know, talking about the film, it was an area we said, are we changing the, are we going too dark here with regard to this area, or by talking about this in a Christmas film? And we thought, no, I mean, because the film was, it's about life, it's a slice of life film, and if we wanted to have a pediatric cardiologist character, that's the kind of thing they struggle with, and that's the kind of thing they deal with on a daily basis. How can they do this better? How can they make a bigger difference? And Jim Brennan and Lisa Gunn, who played the pediatric oncologist and his wife, I think did a really great job of kind of bringing that home, bringing the struggle home, not only to the doctors, but to the families of the doctors who go through this, because it impacts every area of their life. So there is kind of a dark undercurrent with regard to that storyline, and a few of the others have a little bit of a dark undercurrent too, because, you know, it's life. It's not all jingle bells. So it takes on those aspects of our lives that don't stop just because it's Christmas weekend.
Which is a great segue into my next question. It's time for the shameless commercial.
Okay.
Where can people buy Jingle Hell?
You can buy Jingle Hell on Amazon, www.amazon.com. You can buy the DVD there. You can also do instant download and either to rent or to purchase, both of them at Amazon. And you can also go to Janssen.com, which is our distributor's website, where you can buy the DVD. You can even buy the DVD in bulk there, I believe. So if you want a lot of copies of the film, you can go to Janssen as well, which is Janson. So yeah.
I really like the stuff that Janssen put out.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, they're one of my top two favorite distributors. They consistently have outstanding releases. Have they been fun to work with?
They've been terrific. They have been, since the very beginning, they have been great cheerleaders for the film. And, you know, the film is not an easy sell. There's no big movie stars in it. So it's, you know, it was a challenging film to take on, and it took a lot of courage for them to take it on and not say, oh, you know, this is a Brad Pitt film, we can sell it immediately. They've been terrific. They have supported everything we have done with the film. They're supporting this work with St. Baldrick's. Steve Janssen is a great Facebook friend as well, who makes great comments on Facebook. And Betsy and Lynn there, they've been absolutely wonderful, and they have done a great job at getting this movie out to people and getting it seen, and I think they're terrific, and I highly recommend them. Yeah, they're great.
Oh, I think that they're a really, really great company.
They are, and they're very they pay a lot of personal attention. You know, they're not just about volume. They're about, well, what is your film about, and how do we do this best? And they've done a terrific, terrific job.
Yeah, I look at their catalog, and that there's very few items that do not, you know, reach out at you.
Right.
You know that it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm. And they've got great documentaries, too, as part of their catalog. They're terrific. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Book writing and filmmaking are a bit like drug addiction. Once you start it, it's darn hard to stop. So what have you been doing since making Jingle Hell?
Well, you know, I joke with people that I've been paying for making Jingle Hell for a lot of the time since I made Jingle Hell. But I still work in the theater and film industry. My full-time job is as an entertainment lawyer. But my passion job is writing, and I'm actually not working on a film right now, although there may be a short film in my future. I'm working on a musical with the band Cowboy Mouth, and my co-writer on that is an actor named Todd Lawson. And we are putting together a musical, which we hope to get up on its feet shortly. So maybe you'll see a musical called Disconnected in a town near you. But, yes.
Did I hear you say entertainment lawyer?
Yes, that's how I pay the bills. Yep.
Oh, dear, I know several of those. entertainment lawyers and bills.
Yes. Well, entertainment lawyers sometimes are good at generating bills, so part of the life. But yes, that's what I do for a living.
And I'm guessing that New York is where you hang your shingle.
Yes, yes, I am in New York. I'm at Senderoff and Baruch in Times Square. So we are right in the heart of New York, and we are in the heart of the New York theater district, and I have always actually worked in New York. I have never been based out of L.A. My whole career has been in New York. So I like it that way. There's a lot going on. A lot of stories come out of New York just every day. Walking into the subway, you will find a story. So.
Yes, I'm sure that's true.
That is good for good and for ill. There are stories in New York. So,
I'm looking at the clock, and my automated producer is whining in my ear.
Okay.
So, Carter. It has been a pleasure to talk to you, and I do hope that Jingle Hell sells a hellish amount of copies.
Thank you, Simon. It's been great to be here.
Okay. Who knows? One day we may talk again.
This is true.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking part.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Till next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe day, week, and holiday season. And don't forget to pick up your copy of Jingle Hell. It's well worth watching. Till next time, this is Simon Barrett. Goodbye.